We certainly love our pets in America, and even pets that don't live with us. Look at the huge popularity of cat videos on the web. But do we really want to know what our pets are thinking? Apparently so. Today's guest has achieved success writing poetry in the imagined voices of cats and dogs. Francesca Marciuliano wrote a book of cat poetry called I Could Pee on This, followed by a book of dog poetry called I Could Chew on This, both big sellers. His latest book is called I Need My Mommy, Need with a K, and other poems by kittens. Francesca Marciuliano is also the writer of the Sally Forth comic strip, now syndicated in nearly 800 newspapers around the country. He also writes a webcomic called Medium Large and was the head writer for the PBS children's series Seymour's Playhouse. He lives in New York. I Need My Mommy, as I pointed out, preceded by I Could Pee on This and I Could Chew on This. Francesca Marciuliano. Chess, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here. And you pronounce that last name better than I do. It took me 47 years to nail it, to get it right, but you got it just like that.
You got to go for the C-H-O-O, Marciuliano, yeah.
Yeah, you do have to hit that hard, and then it all comes together.
So when you meet people for the first time, exclusive of how you pronounce your last name, I mean, what do you tell them you do? Because there's a bunch of facets to being a writer in your case.
Well, I mean, usually I do just say, you know, I don't just walk around going, I'm a writer, you know, wandering the city streets. But when someone asks, I do say, you know, I'm a writer, and then you get that look that they're going, ooh, so how do you earn a living?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and that makes perfect sense. And so I tell them I write humor books, and I write a comic strip, and then I tell them which strip, but Sally Forth doesn't run in New York City, never has, so that never does anything around here.
Really? Why? No paper in New York City? Of course, you don't have the Times as a choice, but...
I mean, the Daily News, Newsday, and the Post, those three do not run the strip. And I grew up on Long Island, hence why I sound like this. And it wasn't there because, you know, the strip was running before I took it over. I took it over in 97, and it wasn't running. So when I got the strip, I was happy. I was like, thank you, of course I'll do it. And then they asked, have you read the strip? And I sort of, I'm sure it's very nice. So then they sent me like 9 years worth of comics for me to review. And that was before, you know, this was like 97 when they couldn't just send you a USB. You know, I got this giant package of printed 9 years of comics.
And that's how you had to get up to speed on Sally Forth?
Yeah, I mean, I knew of the strip, and then I took about 2 years of doing a horrible job with it. But I hope I've improved over since then.
Let's talk about your attraction to cats and dogs, and cats. Can we assume you're a cat person because of your long history with Boris and Natasha?
I am. I'm one of those people that no one likes to hear the answer to, and then I'm a cat and a dog person, which to a lot of people is like saying I'm a Republican and a Democrat. But I do love both animals. I would never say I'm one or the other. I tended to have cats more, and I had Boris and Natasha for 17 years. In the city, it is easier to have, in New York City, it is easier to have cats. You can certainly have dogs, and I see people in Manhattan walking around with a Mastiff, which I guess they have in lieu of, say, a couch.
If you're going to have an animal that big, yes, you're going to have to ditch a piece of furniture.
It's sort of like, I hope you're at least in a three-bedroom, you know, so I've had more cats, I've had more time with cats as an adult, but I love, you know, I'm the sort of person, somebody's had to talk me out of getting a pet pig, which would more or less break any lease I could possibly get here.
Although in some cases they're neater than dogs, I hear.
They are remarkably intelligent, and they can be litter trained, and these are all things that when you say aloud in public, don't, you know, make people slowly take one or two steps back. I'm going to get a piglet and litter train it, and then they're no longer asking me what I do for a living. They're just walking away.
Yeah, nice to meet you, writer boy, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's all nice, Francesca Marciuliano, but I got to go now.
Yeah. So the idea, though, I mean, moving from a love of pets to actually writing in a pet's voice, poetry, I mean, how did that leap come about? And I understand Charlie Sheen might have actually played a part here.
Well, that is true. I mean, part of it is I think anyone who has a pet has conversations with their pet. And I'm sure anyone who has a pet also has a voice they do for their pet. And I used to have Boris and Natasha, and I won't share that here because that's embarrassing. But you do, with your pets, you do try to figure out what are they thinking. I mean, with a dog, you know, it's sort of like, what are you thinking? And with a cat, it's like, what are you thinking? Because, you know, a dog is very demonstrative, but you're trying to figure out the logic behind their actions. And with a cat, they can be somewhat introverted and, you know, and very secretive. So you're just trying to break the code and trying to figure out what on earth they're thinking to begin with. And that was the nature of the poems. But as you said, what had happened, was this 2011? Yeah. I had accidentally come across online and didn't mean to, and I think it was through the Onion AV Club and such, and they had posted this interview that Charlie Sheen did, is when he had his big, for lack of better, I guess the proper psychological nomenclature, mental breakdown. And I heard it, and I thought, okay, this is very weird. And my first thought was to take some of the quotes and put it and do this whole thing of putting it in the voice of Ted Forth, my character from Sally Forth, and just do some panels. And then I thought, you know what? I'd like to keep that job. So I thought, for some reason, the next reaction, well, of course, cats. So I posted some quotes and put it with photos of cats, the photos that I thought that worked. And in 3 days, I got 1.5 million hits. And it got covered, like the New York Times did a little piece on the Today Show, Today Show Online, I would say, but a lot of newspapers and media and such did a bit on it. So I thought, maybe people are right. The internet is 98% cat, and the other 2% wondering what's the deal with all the cats. And so I had written some poems to deal with the loss of my cats, but they were all funny, so I thought, you know what, maybe I'll share a few of them since people seem to like cats. And I got a very good reaction, so I kept writing more, and then eventually I sent them to my agent.
Okay, let's talk more about the process from there. So the cat book, the dog book, and now I Need My Mommy by Francesca Marciuliano. We'll come back and talk more with Chess and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us back on the Jefferson Exchange in 1:05. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Francesca Marciuliano, probably best known as the writer of the syndicated newspaper comic strip Sally Forth, but maybe even better known now as the years go by for his books of poetry in the voices of pets. Started with a cat book called I Could Pee on This and a dog book called I Could Chew on This. And now is out with a book of poems by kittens, I Need My Mommy, need spelled with a K, as in what the kittens do when they're needing on. Yeah, you know how it goes. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So I think the point you were getting to was that you were probably as surprised as anybody at the success of I Could Pee on This.
I was. I mean, I am still happily surprised. At no point has it gotten to me like, fine, it's all that. No, I am still thrilled it's selling so well and that people have had such a great reaction to it. And, you know, they send me photos of their cats with the book. They tell me stories about their cats. And I think that's actually the best part of it all. But, no, at no point did I come in going, or do I still think going, oh, yeah, this is a slam dunk. That, you know, the book's called I Could Pee on This. So already, you know, who knew how that was going to work either way.
Go ahead.
No, I'm saying, but it's been and continues to be a very happy surprise.
How hard is it to continually stay in that mode? I guess that the bigger question is, how hard is it to come up with enough poems to fill a book? These are not big books, but I can imagine that, you know, by the time you've done your 115th poem in a dog's voice, you're starting to rack your brains. Or does it come really easily?
I would never say, oh yeah, it comes easily, because that's never how it works. But it's for each book, there are 60 poems in each book, and for each book, I write about 120 to 150 poems. And then I kind of winnow it down to the 60 that I think are the best because, you know, just so I make sure the ones I have there are the ones I really like. But, you know, there is a period of a break once a book is done, then I do other things, and, you know, I've been fortunate enough that then another book has come up. So I'm not constantly thinking in the tone of the voice that now I'm slowly losing my mind that I'm buying flea and tick powder for myself.
That's a
good
thing.
But it's... A lot of it is with cats. It's remembering my own cats, and you know, I grew up with a cat. My parents took care of at one point upwards of 12 feral cats, which I think I told you once before is a number I'm sure none of the neighbors discussed. And
well, in fairness, I lived in Levittown and we had 23 at one time, but let's not go there.
So you were that family.
Yes,
okay, now
exactly.
You were the other family they were talking about on Long Island.
Right,
but The dog Bucks is also thinking about my dog Panda, and I had two other dogs growing up. I had a Great Dane called Splash, because that's what happens when you allow your 4-year-old to name the dog. And a Beagle named Snoopy, because that's what happens when, you know, you let a peanuts obsessed child think he's being really original and cute. But it's with a dog, it's very easy because around the city you see them all the time. You see them interacting with other dogs. You see them interacting with people. Sometimes you do the sad thing, you know, them tied up outside waiting for their person to come out. So you get, by simply walking outside of Manhattan, it's very easy to get inspiration for the dogs, for the cats. It's all the years I've had with them. And, you know, I had a pet turtle once, so, you know, Lord knows what book's going to come out eventually. But it really is about the time, and I'm always happy to be in that mindset.
Chess, was there a little more hesitation about doing a kitten book because it could just be so unbearably cute if you weren't really careful?
Yeah, I mean, that is always the warning. And the attempt with these books, although, you know, I hope they're endearing and I hope they seem reminiscent of people's pets and I hope people find them funny and at least somewhat insightful, The number one, you sort of like how they used to say in Seinfeld, you know, rule number one, no lessons, no hugging. The rule here was not cutesy. And that's been the get-go from the beginning. As I said, the first book is called I Could Pee on This, which more or less sets that from, you know, from the going. And I know this one is I Need My Mind and You with a K, which seems like it lends itself more to a cutesy angle. But I think when people do the cutesy aspect with pets, I don't think that's doing pets any favors. I don't think that reflects on the relationship people have with pets. I think it can kind of objectify the pets as basically like a toy you could have or some sort of, you know, accessory. So, and I never see my pets like that or anyone's pets, and I don't imagine most people do, so I try to avoid that. So with the kitten book, it's where the cat book was, you know, the kitten book, the difference between the kitten book and the cat book is that the kitten book is about childhood and adolescence, basically through the prism of a kitten. So these are kittens getting to know their world, being somewhat hyperactive, being somewhat disagreeable at times, and exploring to the point that there is a lot of, you know, there is a lot of damage enough for, you know, for your rental insurance to count.
Right.
And so, yeah, no, but I've never wanted these books to be cutesy because I don't think that would serve any purpose.
Can we ask you to read I Need My Mommy? Is the book handy?
Yes, it is. And about 2 minutes before the radio show, I thought, oh, I actually should have this book handy.
I'm glad you thought of it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's in England, there's a Random House is publishing, Chronicle Books is publishing it in North America, but in the United Kingdom, it's Random House, and they've changed the book's title to I Need My Mummy.
Oh, of course, yes, to make it British.
Which I think is so adorably British and could not be more British unless the book was called Oi, Kittens. So, which really, I would have been just as happy with. That would have been fantastic, too. So you want me to read the title poem?
Yes, please, page 12.
And this will be an aside for, are you a Doctor Who fan?
Not really.
Oh, okay. Well, this anyone who's listening to Doctor Who, the British version of I Need My Mommy, and this one it starts, are you my mommy? The British version, of course, says, are you my mummy? Which anyone who watches Doctor Who, that's a frightening line because it's one from one of their scarier episodes. But don't think of that when you see the book. It's all happy and good. I really don't know how to sell myself is what I'm saying. I can undercut myself in half a second.
You're working hard at it, I could tell.
Yeah, I was going to say, I should not be in charge of my own brand. All right, so here is the poem, I Need My Mommy. Are you my mommy, I ask, as I need the blanket, only for the family quilt to lie on the bed? Are you my mommy, I ask, as I need the sweater, only to find that cashmere is so easy to shred? "Are you my mommy?" I ask as I knead the dog, only to learn that apparently that is not a teat. "Are you my mommy?" I ask as I knead the chicken, only for two cutlets to now be stuck to my feet. "Are you my mommy?" I ask as I knead your body, only to remove clump after clump of chest hair. "You are my mommy," I say, as I keep clawing at your skin until I get bored and just tear into the chair.
Anybody who's ever been around a kitten or any cat that still has its claws can certainly relate to a lot of this. That is the title poem, "I Need My Mommy," from Francesca Marciuliano's book, "I Need My Mommy and Other Poems by Kittens," here on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join our discussion, talk about the things you've seen your kittens do, and talk about the whole process of writing. He also, of course, is the writer now for the Sally Forth comic strip and 800 newspapers around the world. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Chess, what's the reference to the team of writing instructors and an art grant in the introduction of this book?
Well, you know, there's a large staff of kittens, and like anyone knows with the monkeys, it takes them a while to, you know, you put them all in typewriters, it takes them a while to focus, but the problems with the kittens is a red dot on the wall and suddenly they've all lost their mind and no one's paying attention. And, you know, the grant money is probably from a curious art program. But, you know, they got an office. They destroyed the office, so they're happy with that. I've got a deal with the security deposit, so I'm completely screwed out of that. They ruined me for good. But, you know, it's now they just wait. And now, like any new authors that they are, they're just constantly refreshing the Amazon page or, you know, the IndieBound page or the Barnes & Noble page to see where the, you know, where the sale listing is. And then, so then they're all around their smartphones and they're just remarkably self-obsessed now. So I'm going to let that go for a while and let them have their moment.
Where is the book currently on the Amazon list? Because you've probably been hitting the refresh button a lot, too.
I have not.
Really?
Because I have done this twice already, and I am taking a more zen approach. It's it made the San Francisco Chronicle New York bestsellers list this week, so I'm very happy about that. So I found that out. So it's actually been on a few bestsellers lists now. But as far as the refreshing thing, I have weaned myself off of that because it's way too easy to fall into that.
We talked about approaches, and you said a few minutes ago about kind of like kittens in adolescence. You know, they're learning about their world, but of course they are kittens,
right.
Not human adolescents. But I mean, so many different approaches even within that context you could go. I mean, for one thing, do kittens realize how adorable they are? I mean, do the poems get into that level of understanding?
Yeah, there are some poems, or there's one or two poems that address the fact that some kittens do realize how adorable they are, and they do realize what an awesome weapon that is, or power, depending on how they wish to wield it. So, there are poems regarding how they know they can get away with things simply because they are kittens. And whereas, like in the cat book, is so the cats got away with things because they weren't quite concerned whether or not you want them to get away with it or not. Kittens, there is this aspect of wanting your attention and wanting your approval to a certain degree, like a puppy, but also the fact that, look at me, what are you going to do? Really, what are you going to do?
Right, and you do get into the issues of the things that the cats will get into. I mean, there are references in the poems to cats drenched in whiskey, cats covered with powder from various kitchen ingredients.
Right.
And one of my favorites, though, was the reference to kitty cannoli.
I think that's actually in the introduction, I believe. I'm trying to figure out...
I think so, too. I don't think it's in one of the poems, but the idea is that a cat will crawl into a toilet paper roll and and end up looking like a kitty cannoli, for folks who understand Italian desserts.
That's my one reference to Half My Heritage. I had to put it in there somewhere. But, I remember when one of my kittens, and he just went in there, my first thought was, why am I letting a toilet paper roll lie around? I've got to clean up better in the apartment. But the other aspect was it was just shoved in there, and it was absolutely adorable, but it just looked like a cannoli. I'm sure it could have also looked like a burrito.
It's true. We can go either kind of ethnic food here.
Exactly. You know, depending on what you prefer.
Chess, book at hand. Why don't we go to I've Been Watching on page 16, if you don't mind.
Oh, no problem. And actually, thank you very much for page numbers. So, I've been watching. Like a human baby, I cry a lot. Like a human baby, I need your help. Like a human baby, I crave your love. like a human baby, I sometimes wedge myself behind the fridge, or run screaming across the kitchen countertop, or hide inside pillowcases, only to claw wildly at your ears when you rest your head. Like a human baby. I don't know everything about human babies, especially since you don't have one yet. But when you do, you can thank me for how I prepared you for when your human baby starts gnawing on exposed wires.
The poem I've been watching from I Need My Mommy, I Need with a K, and other poems by kittens by Francesca Marciuliano, who's our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. I understand I Could Pee on This, your earlier book of poems by more adult cats, has been used by high school students in competitions?
It was. Last year, I believe it was last year, early last year, a couple students wanted to read poems from the selections, and then some schools started to use it as a way of introducing kids to poetry in a more fun way, and which I could not be prouder. I think if there's the greatest achievement out of all this, it's that, not because, you know, ooh, people are treating it as my poetry. It's just that if this is helping kids get interested in poems, in a more general aspect, reading, and then in a larger aspect, the care and concern with animals, I think this is all gold. So I was very happy, very touched, and it was just a remarkable moment.
Your filter is pretty good, isn't it? Because we do get Sally Forth every day in the Oregonian out here, and the Sunday Strip as well. But it seems like, particularly Ted, is enough of a nutty character that he could go off the rails and say something weird at just about any time. But in Sally Forth, the comic strip, and in the poetry as well, it's like you're hinting at things that could be dark and scatological or any one of a number of different things. But you're very restrained.
Thank you. It's there is that approach. I mean, my strip medium large is the one that's probably goes a little more darker than everything. I do occasionally like a dark sense of humor, but I also know when and where that is most appropriate. So I don't place that. I place that in very few places. Place that in very few places. Yes, this is why I get paid to write. But I think that's important. I think anything, you can't keep everything so light and so airy, because then it just kind of falls apart and drifts away. And I think anything that has light is, of course, going to cast some sort of shadow. And I think you need to address that in some way, in a humorous way. And it doesn't have to be in a dark, penetrating way. But, you know, it's just, I think that adds depth to anything. Otherwise, it becomes, like we discussed earlier, it can become cutesy, and I don't think cutesy serves any purpose.
Do you keep a piece of paper or a smartphone or something nearby and constantly record notes, ideas, things that can go any one of your writing things, and then you have to decide later, well, this really doesn't work for Sally Forth, so I better put it onto the webcomic?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the notepad function on an iPhone is my godsend now. And I also keep, like, one of those little Moleskine pads, so I write down in that, because I used to do it where before I had a smartphone and wasn't smart enough to carry around the notepad, it's sort of thing you had to keep in memory, and then you had to keep, like, the mnemonic device for that memory, and by the end, I just have a series of words when I got home that I didn't know what was referring to. But, yeah, it's constantly writing, and then, even in the shower, it's sort of like, do I jump out of the shower now and write this? Because that just seems embarrassing. But, it can go anywhere. A lot of times I walk, how I write basically is I walk about 5 to 6 miles a day. And except for when it's like 95 degrees, which is usually August in Manhattan.
Right.
and during that time is when I write my Sally Forth strips, when I write these books, when I try to come up with other ideas. And I'm fortunate enough, I've got a small studio apartment, but I've got a private outdoor space, which is why I'm letting the small studio apartment not bother me in any stretch of the imagination. And so I get to write outside. I enjoy writing outside more than anything else. And I think most writers or people who do write would say the same thing.
And so let's talk about the writing process then. I mean, for any of the work you do, I mean, do you write on an iPad or something, or do you have the full keyboard in your lap or what?
When I do write, it's on the MacBook Pro. But most of my writing happens while I'm walking. And it's just a lot of notes. And I will also say a lot of my writing happens in the shower. It's just no one needed that image. So we're going to stress back to the walking part. But, it's mostly that. And then I've done this enough that when I start writing, the ideas can at least be fully formed. So by the time I hit the computer, I'm more or less able to write out. So at least the first draft is there. It isn't like a couple random words. And with Sally Forth, I've been writing it now for almost wow, I'm going to try to see it. Wow, almost 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been writing it longer than the original person. It's been a while here. And Sally Forth, I'm fortunate enough that I know the characters well enough that if I can come up with a situation, then it becomes a little easier to figure out what their reaction is going to be to it and to each other in that reaction. Because the idea, hopefully, is the right character-based humor, not punchlines. I don't want the strip to be like at the end, it's like ba-dum-bump, that the strip's running towards a joke. I'd like the joke to be part of what's happening in the strip. And I like the strip, I mean, anything that happens in the strip is remembered in the strip. It kind of creates a convoluted timeline since no one seems to be aging. But actually the baby, Jackie, Sally's sister, Jackie's baby, turns 1 year old this year. And Hillary addresses the fact that how is that possible since she's still 12. And Ted's just like, don't look at that too much. That's only going to cause problems. But, yeah, so, I mean, everything that happened, and I like that. I like building a timeline as much as it's a flat timeline because, you know, it can't move forward. But, you know, it's like building a community aspect. I like building a history within the strip. And I like creating characters. I mean, Hillary's friend Faye and Nona, the mom, the sister, the dad, the fact that Ted's from Long Island in the first place, all that happened. And, you know, I've been doing that in the last 10 years or so. And it gives me a great sense of joy. It's just that I love these characters, and I will do it until for as long as newspapers run. So I've got like 4 or 5 weeks left.
We'll take a break right there. Francesca Marciuliano is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the current writer of the Sally Forth comic strip, as you heard, 18 years at the job, and the author of a new book of poems by Kittens, I Need My Mommy, Need with a K. We'll come back and talk more with Chess and take your phone calls and emails if you would like to join us. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. We come down to the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today, once again, is Francesca Marciuliano. He joined us about a year ago to talk about his book of poetry by dogs, I Could Chew on This, which was preceded by his book of poetry by cats, I Could Pee on This. His latest effort is called I Need My Mommy and Other Poems by Kittens, need spelled with a K, of course, which is something kittens are wont to do. He is also, of course, Francesca Marciuliano is the author of the Sally Forth comic strip in newspapers around the world, 800 altogether. And as he just reported, he figures he still has a job for another 4 or 5 weeks, given the overall shape of the newspaper business, and does a web comic called Medium Large, a little darker than Sally Forth, and worked on the PBS children's series Seymour's Playhouse. You can talk to him about all the work he has done as a writer through the years at 800-838-3760 around the region, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Joy and talent emails, please don't age the Forth family in Sally Forth. It cannot work out. Gasoline Alley and Safe Havens prove my point. If you have to, age them in dog years.
I think, yeah, there's also a comic strip, Funky Winkerbean, that jumped 10 years.
Oh, I remember that. Yes, they became, the new beginning or something.
Yeah, they did it. He did it once when they became adults, and then he did it again, and I think they're about 50 now. And it's a much different strip. We will leave it there. And but no, there won't be, you know, I like doing flashbacks in Sally Forth because you get to learn more about the characters that way, and it kind of builds their history, which I get to write after the fact, so I'm very happy about that. It just keeps building the world. And I once did an alternate timeline when Ted and Sally hadn't met, and Ted's life was a mess.
Yeah.
But Sally was doing better, but Ted's life, you know. But I may one day do a flash forward, you know, if I can make it work and, you know, Ted finally gets his jetpack. But right. other, you know, he'll be 92 and just hovering around 2 feet above the ground in his driveway. But, no, they're going to pretty much stay like this. And part of it is I actually have aged them. When I got the strip, I'd say they were about 36 or 37, and Hillary was about 8 years old. Hillary is now 12. Ted and Sally are 42. I was aging them along with me, and then after a certain point, I realized I had to stop.
Right, because...
So Ted's Gen X, all of Ted's Gen X references are eventually going to have to become millennial references. I realize that. But it's so much for the Voltron jokes.
Right.
But no, and I think part of it where the aging will have to has stopped is because Hillary at 12 and Hillary at 13 really show a difference in their world. Even though not really, there is this one thing, once you go from tween to teen, it becomes a different nature. And I like keeping Hillary, I like the tween year. I like the storylines I can get from that. And, you know, the teenager, I think a lot of ships, they expect, oh, it's going to be more about boyfriends and everything like that. And with Hillary, I specifically have a boyfriend only show up in the summer. He doesn't live there. So Hillary's life is never about a boyfriend.
Except in the summer. And you do age them enough that the boyfriend had he's about a foot taller this summer.
I did, yeah. The boyfriend is actually a year older, and he is a foot taller. I wanted to do some sort of change because that actually added a little bit. But I never wanted Hillary, the boyfriend stories I think are fun, I think they're sweet, or at least I try to make them so, and I think they're interesting, but I never want Hillary's life to be about boys, because I think that'd just be a wrong message to send. It's like, here's a girl, she has all these interests, music, writing, painting, she has all these big plans, but look, she's constantly talking about boys, would not be the message to send, and I mean...
Well, it would almost make her too. It would almost make her too normal, too, wouldn't it? I mean, part of the point of the fourth family is these are not really your average middle class folks in the way they think and act, and certainly talk to each other.
That's true. It would normalize her to a degree that I think I'd find a little boring, you know. Because, and here's the point: Hillary, Nona, and Faye are not the popular kids. But the thing you never see in the strip are the popular kids. So there's never talk about them going, "Why aren't we popular? Why are we outcast?" It doesn't matter because they get to be with each other, and they get to have their friendships. And I think, you know, kids who may not be popular, they're perfectly happy in their own world. So you don't need to have the other world be as a comparison. So, you know, they're not trying to be happy. They're not trying to be popular. They're trying to be themselves. And with the fourths, for good or for bad, they can only be themselves. And that's why they even mention occasionally how they don't seem to really be invited to their neighbors' parties a lot.
Yes, I've noticed that. They are kind of the social misfits of the neighborhood.
And, you know, maybe that's my upbringing, or maybe that's my projection. You know, Ted is more or less my avatar. He's like if my inner child could kind of burst through my chest cavity.
Which...
And scalpel, you know, flashlight. I don't know how he's going to get out, but he'll find a way. And it's, but I like that. I think, and this is my opinion, so this is a reflective thing. I think a lot of ways some cartoonists will have an avatar in the strip, and that's the great character. I like having the avatar who's kind of... It doesn't have his act together because, you know, we all don't. And I like a world where the main characters aren't necessarily the be-all and there. They're not the center of the earth. They're not the ones who are the perfect family and outside are the weirdness. I like that the core family is the oddball family because I think if you look at most families, they are the oddball family.
The family we're talking about is the fourth family in the comic strip and the newspapers, Sally Fourth, which Francesco Marciuliano is the writer for. He's also the author of now three books of poetry by Petz, including the latest I Need My Mommy and other poems by Kittens. He's our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Chess, some of the running jokes in Sally Fourth, like Hillary and her garage band with her friends and the song You're So Party, Let's Go Dancy. Is that actually written down somewhere? Is there actually a tune for that, either in your head or actually recorded someplace?
There are the lyrics, because of the nature of the song, are more or less the title.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that is pretty much the song. The purpose of that song is just to get on the air. You know, it's a clean song. This is not, you know, Nicki Minaj's Anaconda. This is a clean song. It's just the title. And... because that's what you really think of Sally Fourth. You think the Nicki Minaj reference. Why I'm doing that, I have no idea. But, you know, it's, so it's more or less that. I have a sort of a song version in my head. I'm not a songwriter. Someone actually made a video of the song. They created a different tune, but I was happy to see that. They used a GIF that the artist Jim Keefe created. And he used, you know, he used that, and he made a made a music video. There's a music video of "You're So Party, Let's Go Dancing" on YouTube. And it is just the title of the song is the lyric, and it's perfect for what the song is. And I dare you to hear the entire thing.
I think we'll take you up on that. In fact, we'll see if
it's
we can.
Only a minute and a half, so it won't drive you too nuts.
All right, we'll see if we can make if it's worth a Facebook link as we go through the day today. The process when you take over a strip, and you took it over from the creator Greg Howard, right?
Right.
Did you have to audition? I mean, how do you apply for a job as the new writer for an existing newspaper strip?
For a lot of strips, when they have new writers, there are auditions, and so I found out. I didn't. I had submitted a completely different comic strip. And they called me up, and they said, "We really like your strip, but we're not going to publish it." And I thought, oh, great, now they're bored and they're just calling up people. I expected like a cackle and then a hang-up immediately after that. But what they said is they really like the writing, and would you like to take over the strip Sally Forth? And I said, yes, and I think I said yes between the words Sally and Forth. And I think they realized, and then they asked, have you read the strip? And that's when I told you earlier, it's like, I'm sure it's a nice strip. But I wrote it, and for the first 2 years, there was another writer. They had already had a writer, like a new writer. So it kind of, I didn't know it until a couple years later that there was an audition process between the two of us, which sounds weird and sounds almost kind of Logan's Run, you know, it almost sounds like a Hunger Games aspect to it.
But, nice updating of the reference, by the way.
What?
Nice updating of the reference from Logan's Run.
Yeah, it can't all be Gen X references. I've got a, you know, Maze Runner. See, I'm just going to say things out loud that are current. But it was a process, you know, and I lucked out. I got it maybe because, you know, I live 20 blocks away from the syndicate. That's what I always let you tell myself that was the reason, because I've got great self-esteem. And the first couple years were rocky. I don't think I really had a handle on the strip until I got a handle on Ted, by which I mean until when I changed Ted completely.
Hmm.
And then it started to become more my humor, for good and for bad, depending on the reader. And it became, I mean, my editor says now, he likes it a lot. He's very happy with it. He says he loves all the improvements. So, yeah, I'm giving myself that one compliment. But it is a much different strip than it was, and that was the intent. And this is the strip. This is the sort of strip I always want to read. For, you know, the strip where there are characters, it's character-based humor, and the history is not forgotten in the strip. So I'm not saying I do a great job. I'm just saying these are the kind of strips I like to read.
Do you get to a point where you're writing dialogue and you're thinking, oh, wait a minute, no, Ted wouldn't say this, but Hillary would, or something like that. You realize it's just wrong for the character?
Yeah, I mean, right now it's come to a point that usually when I'm thinking in the character's head, I kind of have a sense of their dialogue. With Hillary, say, and Nona, occasionally I just have to keep in mind that they are 12, so some of my pop culture references don't work, and I make jokes where Ted is referenced, you know, oh, that's just like, you know, David and Roseanne, and there was just blank stares from them. And there was even a blank stare from Nona to a Back to the Future reference. So, you know, I do keep in mind their age group and what I could write for them. And I do keep, you know, you with a comic strip, with anything else in TV, the kids always talk a little older than they are. But I like to think, well, they're smart, so of course they're going to talk like that. But I do keep that in mind. And, yeah, I mean, it's great. And I've been edited for one line my entire run. So that was good. And it was because of a naming of a video game.
Oh, okay. Is this just a copyright kind of thing or something? Or just
No. What happened is that Hillary and Faye were found playing a game that was rated M, sort of a Grand Theft Auto. And I wasn't going to use an actual game's name because I didn't want to make a statement about that particular game. That wasn't the point of it all. But I wanted to come up with a game's name that sounded like it could be M-rated. So the game I created was the Knifing on Knife Hill, Knifers Edition. And my editor called up, and he was already laughing. And says, like, there's no way this is going to print. I said, okay, yeah, fine. But I understood his point. But to me, it's like, well, that sounds like an M-rated game. What I'm saying is I don't play a lot of video games.
That's probably a good thing. Let's come back to I Need My Mommy and Other Poems by Kittens, because there are a couple of more good ones in here. I want to make sure we can get in before we go. So let's see, page 21, People Food, if you don't mind.
Page 21. I'm going to do hold music because I look like, do. Always go to the old girl from Ipanema because there's no copyright aspect, but then it's stuck in your head for the next 2 days. All right, so I proudly open the page. I'm looking at page 23. I'm working here. All right, 21, People Food. leave food on the counter, it's public domain. If you keep food in a bag, it's fair use. If you have food on your plate, it's free license. If you hold food in your hand, it's non-exclusive. And if you open a box of pizza, it's open source, or crowdsourcing, or whatever you call it. Where my butt plops in tomato sauce and your head drops in your hand.
The poem People Food from Francesco Marciuliano's book, I Need My Mommy. Let's get another one in here. Let's see. Not Prepared on page 29.
29, 29. 26, 26. All right, here we go. Okay, this starts with some yelling. So, not prepared. Holy, what the, son of a... That thing isn't cute. That thing isn't purple. That thing isn't fabric. That thing isn't at all like the toy mouse you got me. Now he's skittering across the floor. Now I'm scrambling up your legs. Now you might as well have me fix, because my manhood is as good as gone.
The words of a kitten, as imagined by Francesco Marciuliano in the poem Not Prepared. So this is the exposure to a real mouse, not the purple catnip mouse, huh?
And when I was a kid, we had a... We had a Siamese cat named Bettina, which is also the name of Jackie's daughter in Sally Forth, because when she said it was named after a pet cat, that was my pet cat. And she was really small. She was a runt of a litter. And one day, it was in the basement, like near the garage, I just saw her run right past me. I was like, okay. And then chasing right after her was a little mouse. And at that point, it's like, well, at least she's cute.
Right. Because she's not going to be a mouse catcher, that's for sure.
We're not going to have a mouser on our hands.
How much time then, Chess, in a week do you spend writing then? I mean, it's not a 40-hour week, or at least it's a scattered 40-hour week if it is, but how much time do you spend writing all the different things you do?
Listening to the way you talk, Chess, I'm sure your brain can't focus on anything too long, but...
Did not say
so
that.
So in your scattershot perspective, how are you managed to even hold a job? No, I write every day. I keep this as a full day writing job. I mean, yes, a lot of it could be outside walking, and it could be trying to think of writing or suddenly staring and realize that's been happening for 35 minutes. But no, every day I write, you know, and some of it is funny stuff. I'll just write for myself, or I'll post in the website medium-large.com just to, you know, to keep an audience, because I like anything. But there are things I want to write that won't necessarily be for publication. Except just since I'm not like writing it for a book or for Sally Forth. But anytime I can write, I think is always positive. And I treat this as a full-time job.
Our puppy's next, because I'm just trying to figure out if we can get you back for around Labor Day next year, because this is getting to be a good tradition.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. Thank you so much, by the way. This has been great. There will be puppies. However, the next book, although cat-related, is not a poetry book. We mix it up a little. So these will be short little essays. This will be, you know, Cats Helping You With Your Life. It will be the next book. And I actually just submitted the manuscript, so I did the second draft. So that seems to be, they seem to actually be publishing it. So if you do have me back, which I really do appreciate the times you have had me, it will be cat-related.
Good. Okay. It's always fun. Francesco Marciuliano, I Need My Mommy and Other Poems by Kittens. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. This is always great. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Coming up tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about Oregon successfully slowing tobacco sales to minors. At 8:30, we'll talk about a new project in wave energy off of Oregon, but not the floating kind of wave energy. And then we'll talk to the folks at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival about the upcoming Culture Fest. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer and today's engineer, Charlotte Duran. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks so much for listening. Please listen to us again on the next edition of the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio, and have a great day.
Welcome to As It Was, Tales from the Mythical State of Jefferson. Central Park in Sutherland, Oregon, displays one of 59 surviving steam locomotives in Oregon. It has a wheel arrangement called a prairie, with two leading wheels, six coupled driving wheels, and two trailing wheels. built by Alco Cook in 1921 for the city of San Francisco as the Hetch Hetchy Railroad Locomotive No. 5. Its name changed to No. 100 when Weyerhaeuser purchased it in 1937 for its Vail, Washington operation and sent it south to Sutherland in 1948. The logging lines, 30 to 50 cars a day, stretched east from town for about 19 miles to support the Springfield, Oregon mill being built in 1947. Camps were established to house workers. The line thrived until its closure in 1961, when Weyerhaeuser started harvesting its holdings northeast of Springfield. A few small camp cabins remain today. Though No. 100 was not the only engine to work the Sutherland Line, it drew attention when the company donated it to the city in 1962. A shelter protected it from the elements. The town centennial in June 2011 chose a likeness of the locomotive as its logotype. Today's episode of As It was written by Emily Blakely, edited by Kernan Turner, and produced by Raymond Scully. I'm Shirley Patton. As It Was is a co-production of JPR and the Southern Oregon Historical Society. To share stories or to learn more about the series, visit asitwas.org.